Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And we're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell this morning, and have not even had the opportunity, other than a quick humorous remark from Cecil, haven't even had a chance to talk about what's on top the topic for the day.
Well, good morning, Lockwood.
Good morning.
Welcome to Duck Day, right?
Yeah, right, that's right.
All right. Lockwood, last week we talked about the guardianship proceeding, which is a formal proceeding before our clerks of Superior Court in the county where the alleged person resides that is potentially going to be held to be unable to handle their affairs, either their financial affairs or possibly their medical care, that they're not taking good care of themselves and that they are at a posture in their life where someone needs to be appointed the guardian of their person and or the guardian of their property. And of course, many times we've discussed the fact that if you have a well-drafted power of attorney and a well-drafted health care power of attorney, then you many times, most times, are able to avoid this lengthy and emotional and expensive proceeding. But there are those cases, of course, where folks do not have these documents or the documents are under contest for some reason. And so that's what we've been talking about. Now, last week we ended with generally some of this same information and into what is called a multiple disciplinary evaluation.
Multidisciplinary evaluation, right?
Yes.
Now,
this
short, is, MDE for short.
Yeah, that's big words for what. So, Wes, you tell us what that is and how that comes about.
Right. I think Lockwood, when we ended up last week, we were talking about what the court wants to see as it relates to medical evidence if we're in an adult guardianship situation. Because the threshold question for the court is whether the respondent is, in fact, incompetent. I mean, that's the first thing we have to deal with. And then we follow up in the event that that determination is made. Then the determination as to who the guardian will be is then addressed.
I want to give this is an example. We talked about this 2 or 3 weeks ago of an individual that was becoming the target for scam artists.
Right.
And the individual was willingly paying the bills that these providers had sent them. And there was grave concern that this particular individual just did not have the ability to walk and talk, drive the car, and everything else. But they just didn't comprehend that they were being taken.
There's so much of that out there, Lockwood. I hear about that all the time, and it just sickens me. I mean, these scams where these people get a hold of these lonely folks in their 80s and their 90s, and they're saying, you know, you've won $1 million. All you have to do is send us $5,000 or $2,000 or $1,500 to pay the taxes so we can get these funds out of Africa or wherever are. It's just awful. But you do sometimes end up in a situation where you have, you know, a family member, a friend who's being subjected to this kind of abuse is really what it amounts to. But they function okay, as far as maybe being able to drive or pay bills or do those type things. Well, we're lawyers. We're not doctors. Mm-hmm. We cannot necessarily make that determination as to whether someone is incompetent to the point where they are, you know, a danger to themselves or others, whether physically or from a financial standpoint. Mm-hmm. But in many cases, when we feel as someone is really jeopardizing their own financial well-being because they're being scammed, then a guardianship is appropriate. And then we have to get the appropriate medical professionals involved to make a determination as to whether there's some level of incompetency involved that us lay people, attorneys, don't necessarily understand. We've got to get the psychiatrist, the psychologist in. We've got to get them in and do that evaluation. Now, in some type situations, we don't really have the way, you know, to get the individual to the doctor to have that evaluation done because the individual doesn't want to go to the doctor. Well, In that type of situation, we sometimes need to file the petition for adjudication of incompetence and then file a motion for this MDE that Cecil was just referring to, the multidisciplinary evaluation, which is a provision in the statute where the clerk of court orders basically a medical workup, a medical evaluation of the individual, so that we can have evidence from an expert witness before the court as to whether this person is competent or not. So we deal with that more often than I would like to see it as far as that abuse situation goes. And sometimes we have to contact the Department of Social Services and get Adult Protective Services involved so they can do their own investigation as it relates to, you know, the finances and how this person has been manipulated, you know, how much money he or she has sent over to wherever, you know, these manipulators are telling her to send the money. But the court, really the best way to deal with that type of situation is a guardianship. I mean, that's where you have to go with it.
I intentionally brought that up because we think of this in form of medical guardianship and the health and well-being of the individual. But as the baby boomers are aging, as the scam artists become more professional, I mean, this is a serious situation, a growing situation.
Right.
And particularly in the area of guardianship, well, because we're talking about the estates of family members.
Right.
Well, I guess that really, Lockwood, we could almost do a program, if you will, to digress here a moment on some of these, I guess we do call them scam. There's really no better word for that, is there?
There's no question about it. Yeah.
And, we as lawyers, are also, I might add, astonishingly, subjected to daily, type of scam, manipulations. I mean, we receive bogus checks in the mail or have clients who bring them by. They look so incredibly real. We also receive, emails from clients who are soliciting our services, and that if we will provide to them our account numbers, they will wire, you know, X number, $100,000 to our account, and we can collect an attorney fee. I mean, and yet some of them are very realistic,
right.
Very realistic. So it is out there. And I mean, if we as lawyers, bless our hearts, are having to discern and decipher and interpret whether or not this is a scam or not, we can only imagine what our elder clients are having to go through. And there they are, many of them living on Social Security income or other limited means. And of course, here their promises to pay certain amounts of money. It's very difficult for them to understand that these things are not real, because that's just not from that's not what happened during that generation.
Right.
You know, Tom Brokaw calls it the last generation.
The greatest generation.
The greatest generation.
Yeah.
Correct. And
yeah.
I agree with that, those words. They are a great generation. But they take this at arm's length many times. And so here we are.
So yeah. you're at the, with the clerk of court, you're trying to bring some sense of clarity to this situation.
Right.
And you're using, again, the multidisciplinary
evaluation.
Evaluation.
Right. You know, sometimes we're dealing with, you know, maybe the children who are concerned about the parent who is being accessed. I mean, maybe the children live somewhere else. I mean, usually the children aren't going to live in the home with their 80 or 90-year-old parent, but sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I see that this kind of this situation of manipulation setting up, not only just because the person is old and may have some deficiencies from a mental perspective and a capacity perspective,
right.
But the loneliness button gets pushed as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're lonely. They're excited by this possibility. So they, once the person calls them and maybe there is somewhat of a conversation, then the person, the manipulator who's called them, knows that basically I have this person hooked and I'm going to call back, as opposed to basically, you know, hanging up the phone. So nevertheless, I mean, we see that quite often. And, you know, I think that from a legal perspective, what we have to understand is that as long as this person, the respondent, the person who is being manipulated, has not been adjudicated incompetent, they're free to do whatever they want to with their finances.
All right. After this break, I'm curious, what is the details? What happens in this hearing with the clerk of court?
Okay.
We're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell with Let's Talk Legal. And by the way, didn't want to mention, you can also call in if you have a question, 800-818-2255, 910-353-4674, and that 252 area code 247-7282. I'll give you their office number here in a few moments. Unfortunately, gentlemen, I think this is a growing market, which is really unfortunate. Stay with us here with Let's Talk Legal. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240. We're talking about the issue of guardianship with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And by the way, the right advice at the right time, Harvell and Collins, spell out the word hand, harvellandcollins.com, 726-9050. We were talking about the topic of guardianship. What goes on in the hearing? You've got the, again, the inter- the dis-
multiple disciplinary evaluation.
Okay.
And of course, I'll be the first to say Wes handles the hearings at our law firm, but let me just say a word here and then he'll take it over. Generally, Lockwood, my experience, I have attended quite a few of these through the years. The clerks of court who do preside at this hearing, first of all, the hearing is somewhat usually a bit private in nature.
Okay.
Okay. It's not like a superior court jury trial. It's a bit more private, a bit more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of, feeling. And it is almost, this is a bit much to say, but almost a round table discussion, if you will, of all of the facts and circumstances concerning this person's life, their financial as well as medical life. I think some of the best hearings that I've attended from a clerk's perspective, having seen some in Craven and Onslow and certainly here in Carteret, are the clerks of court who generally take a relaxed view as to the rules of evidence and wish to hear anything and everything more or less that they can hear so that they can make the best decision that they can as to whether or not this person meets the standard. So yes, you know, sons testify, daughters testify, neighbors testify, wives, husbands, even the alleged incompetent person many times will testify, and will answer certain questions, if called upon and if able to do so. So the answer to your question is, without getting overly specific, is that it is a very general solicitation through testimony of all of the circumstances concerning this person's, current life and that whether or not they're taking their medications, how confused, if at all they get, what some of the specific circumstances have been as to any kind of financial, forgetfulness or abuse or anything of that nature. Everything generally is kind of there. They can be lengthy as a result of this.
Wow.
Right. I would agree, you know, with Cecil that, you know, this is not necessarily like a civil superior court jury trial where the rules of evidence should apply at all stages. It's more of a general, somewhat relaxed hearing.
Do the witnesses, the participants, do they get subpoenaed?
They can be subpoenaed. I mean, if you're going to have an expert witness go, then you subpoena the expert witness to make sure they're going to be there, number one, and number two, so that you can collect cost as it relates to their fees, that type of situation. But Yeah, the rules of evidence and the rules of civil procedure do apply to guardianship proceedings. So there, you certainly do have the subpoena power to get your witnesses there. But
and they're sworn. Mm-hmm. They're given an oath to tell the truth, of course.
Right.
So yes.
Right. Normally, anyone who's going to testify, they're sworn in before the hearing starts. Uh-huh. Okay. And it's not as though folks, you know, the witness takes the stand. Usually, I mean, sometimes we're just in the clerk's office and we have a conversation. Everyone testifies, and the clerk takes that into consideration. Sometimes in guardianship matters that are more highly contested, then, you know, we may have to step up into the superior courtroom, and it's a little more of a formal process. If it's contested, there's attorneys on both sides, that type of thing. But normally, it doesn't get to that level of formality. Now, a very integral part of the guardianship proceeding and the hearing itself is, of course, the guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem is usually an attorney who would be appointed to protect the interest of the respondent. And basically what the guardian ad litem does is typically paid through the respondent, through the court, and is really working for the respondent and to advise the court with regard to what is in the best interest of the respondent. So when the guardian ad litem is appointed, normally the guardian ad litem would then go out and interview the respondent, gather as much information as is necessary to make a determination as to what's in the best interest of the respondent, whether this person should be adjudicated or not, and who the guardian should be, and whether there should be a guardian of the estate, guardian of the person, or a general guardian. There's three different types of guardians. We can talk about that in a moment. So, and I would say also that the opinion of the guardian ad litem as it relates to whether the person should be adjudicated incompetent and who the guardian should be, is usually pretty hard to overcome, because the guardian ad litem really is supposed to be somewhat of a neutral party. They're supposed to inform the court really without bias and without advocating for either the petitioner or maybe anyone who would oppose the guardianship. They're supposed to speak for the respondent himself. So if you have a guardian ad litem whose opinion is that this person is to be adjudicated incompetent, in my opinion, then you probably aren't going to be able to overcome that unless you have some medical evidence, strong medical evidence indicating that they're not, and vice versa.
All right, we're talking about guardianships with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here. I want to get back to you. You said there are three forms of guardians.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we'll get that in just as we wrap things up here with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. The right advice at the right time, harvellandcollins.com. Local number, by the way, 252 area code 726-9050. That's 726-9050. Talking with Wes Collins and pardon me, Cecil Harvell, and I'm looking over here. Okay, we were talking about guardians.
This guardian ad litem, just very quickly, Lockwood, it's a word that, you know, some of our listeners, we use it as if everyone knows what it is. A guardian ad litem is a person. Right. It is many times a lawyer.
Okay.
It is someone that the clerk of court knows has a list of 2, 3, 4, maybe more, but generally a fairly short list of certain lawyers in the community that will serve as an independent guardian ad litem in this particular kind of case.
Okay.
And after many hearings, the clerk begins to have a confidence in certain guardian ad litems and realizes that that particular lawyer seems to be very thorough, comprehensive in their investigation. And as a result of this, as aligns with what Wes is saying, the guardian ad litem very much has the ear of the court. The clerk is going to listen very carefully to what it's guardian ad litem. After all, this person is appointed by the clerk of court to be the guardian ad litem in this case. Wow. And if the clerk has had many experiences with this guardian ad litem and their investigations have been thorough and comprehensive, then the clerk of court is going to listen intently to what they have to say.
Now, you said there are other guardians as well as we wrap this up?
Well, yeah, I know we just have about a minute, but the choice as to what type of guardian needs to be appointed needs to be made by the court, too. There's either guardian of the person, which is then guardian of the estate, and then general guardian. So guardian of the person is like, where do you live? What doctor do you go to? Mm-hmm. You know, just decisions about your person. Okay. Guardian of the estate is obviously I'm in control of your finances and I have to report to the court as to how your money has been used on an annual basis. You know, you have to file an accounting each year. And then a general guardian is in control of everything. So in some situations, you know, we just need a guardian of the person if we're concerned about the safety of the person and there's maybe minimal assets or maybe the assets are held in trust. So the trustee is in control of those anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a little simpler to go just with the guardian of the person because you don't have to then have a bond put in place to then protect the estate. So
I see this as a continuation for next week because what's involved in being a guardian as well, I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
The right advice at the right time, Harvell and Collins. And again, their number, 726-9050, and online at harvellandcollins.com.